meeting of the year of the Castro Colonies Heritage Association, March 17, 1991, will come to order. Mr. Bailey, Lewis Bailey, will have our invocation. Just keep your seats, though. Mr. Bailey? Oh, dear. All right, well, we'll wait just a minute then. Well, then, all right, I'll welcome everybody while we wait for Mr. Bailey. I'm so glad to see all of you here today. I'm sure we're going to have more coming in, so we just will have a little togetherness today. I know some of you are here for the first time. As members, would you please hold up your hand? I don't know if you can stand up. Great, my goodness. Well, why don't you, on second thought, stand up and let us see who you are and tell us your name. Oh, good. Mr. and Ms. Fossler? Myra?
Myra Weiss.
Myra Weiss, and does she know a lot? Great. Oh, well, nice to have you.
Rejoin.
Well, good. I'm glad to have some Habies in here. Get some more Habies in it. Kay Stenzel? Good. I'm glad to have you. I didn't catch your first name, Mrs. R. Helen R. from Bandera. Great. Mr. Ms. Graff from Hondo. Great. And I know we have some visitors with us today. If you all just hold up your hand or stand so we can see who you are. I know we have somebody up here. And yeah, I know you will later. Okay. And we have any other visitors? Great. Glad to have you. Come again. All right, if you'll bow your heads, please, Mr. Bailey, we'll have our invocation.
Lord, we thank you for your heritage. We thank you for our freedom in America and for all those who fought to preserve it. Help us always to appreciate those who have gone before us, those who have made it possible for us to be here. Be with us this afternoon as we learn more about our Native American brothers and sisters. Bless us in Christ's name. Amen.
Thank you, Lewis. All of you members have received your newsletter, and in the newsletter, as always, we have the last minutes of our last meeting. Have you read those minutes? And if you have, I'd like for someone to move that the minutes are approved as presented. Oliver? All right. Did I hear a second? Charlie? Thank you. And then we have the treasurer's report. Joseph?
The checking balance as of last meeting was $3,370. Income in this 3 months was $1,110 from dues, $3,686 from the sale of books. The books, cookbooks sold 70, wall books 28, soul or the Indian fighter book 21, the French book 3, Sister Generosa 9, and Let's Celebrate was 183, and that adds up to the $3,686. From miscellaneous was $96, memorials $80, and bank interest was $80. That's a total income of $5,053. Expenses was administrative was $305, and the bulk of that was the printing of the yearbook. Transfer from this account to the memorial fund account was $110. Quality meeting expense was $303, and that's a mixture of two quarters. Postage and paper supplies was $49. Purchase of book purchases and expense of mailing books was $2,769. That's a total expense of $3,538. That gives us a check-in balance at this time of $4,885. There's money in four different accounts that has as of this time, $38,604. And that gives us a grand total of assets of $43,489. There's no questions at all.
Does anyone have a question about our financial situation? If not, Joseph, thank you very much. Our corresponding secretary, Billy Bilharts. Billy, would you come forward, please?
First of all, we have a letter from Sister Generosa, and she says, I was really elated when I read your statement. This book that you have sold so many copies of is my first published work. And she said, I am delighted that it sells, for that tells me that it is good and is appreciated. Let me say a great thank you for the work that you have done in selling a number of the work. In fact, when you see Connie, please tell her that I will pay her a visit for more copies. A little louder? I can get closer to it. How's that? Only in prayer can you really be paid, and I will do that. God love and bless your work and your kindness. Gratefully, Sister Generosa. And also, CCHA has received thank you letters and notes from the following: Medina Valley Elementary School, Divine Intermediate School, San Antonio College Library, San Antonio Conservation Society, and the San Antonio Public Library. And all of the letters thank us for the gift of a copy of the book, Let's Celebrate. And all of them praise the book and say it will be used. Also, would you please let us know if you change your address? You can write to our box in Castroville or call. This will help us keep our newsletter coming directly to you and not having to take a detour. This will help us keep our labels up to date. We mailed approximately 230 newsletters this time, so you can see it becomes a little problem if you don't keep us informed.
Thank you. Thank you, Billy. Now, can you hear me fine? Okay, great. I would like to make our report from the board meeting. We had our board meeting on February 13th. And as always, we have a lot to discuss, and we did do some business this time. First, we on the cemetery reward that we offered for the desecration of the cemetery in Castroville, since there has not been a person indicted, and our offer was only good through January 31. That has expired, and we voted not to renew. We also approved a resolution honoring Miss Ruth Lawler, and the resolution has appeared in the newspaper, and there's a copy back on the table. We did present to the Landmark Inn on February the 21st a copy, framed copy. We presented copies to her two nieces, and I have received thank you notes from the two nieces. And also we presented to the city of Castroville and to the library in Castroville and to the Chamber of Commerce. And everyone was pleased and happy to receive that. We also discussed and voted to purchase this new sound system, PA system. And we came in at a cost that I think you'll be pleased at for this system, plus the extra speaker, plus the little mic. We came in at a cost of $549.40, a real bargain, I want you to know, for your club to have. We also deliberated and finally approved to reprint the Medina County History Book. And I want every one of you now to help us sell and make people aware that the book is for sale on a pre publication subscription first. If we, I must have 75 orders before I'll give an order to print. The printer will do no less than 200. So we're going to try by May the 1st and see what we get. We've had paid advertisement in the newspapers. We've had in your newsletter, and we've sent out flyers, and we need word of mouth. So we hope that we'll make it, and all those folks who through the years wanted that extra copy or that copy they didn't get. And it'll be a second printing. It'll be just exactly like the first one, full hardcover and everything. $50 down payment. $70 is the cost of the pre-printing subscription, and $80 after May the 1st. And if it's to be mailed, then it's $6 more. And also, that night, we instructed Aline to register Henry Castro's cattle brand. All this years has never been registered, and now it's in the name of the Castro Colonies Heritage Association. And then, of course, we had other little things that we discussed, all in your favor. All right. Committee report, historical research, Herbert Bilhart.
Well, as you see in the newsletter, I try to fill up the extra pages that are available there with something of interest. And I took this book by Father Dominesh about the early days, the very early days of Castroville, and gave you about 4 pages of that. And I'll continue to do that if anyone has anything of that nature that you'd like to see used. Well, I'd be glad to take it and consider it. One other suggestion here for people who are doing genealogy research, an excellent source is available up at Baylor University in Waco, and this is the biggest collection of the papers of Judge Herman E. Hass. And when he had accumulated a lot of material in plans of writing a book on the history of the Castro colonies in Medina County. Some of it went to the University of Texas, and not much of it, and it's not too well organized, but some is there. But most of it is at Baylor, and it consists mainly of clippings from the old Castroville anvil, some back to the 1890s, and they're arranged by families. And there are a lot of births, weddings, and deaths reported in there, and that's the basis of genealogy information, so you might want to go up there. I'm going to try to visit there and give a more full report on what is available there and get that in the newsletter. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Herbert. Membership, Moni or Aline? Oh, as of today, we have 280 members. Great. Those membership gals are working. Folklore, Lucy, have you a report for us? While we wait for Lucy, Lucy has been busy this past year, and I'm sure staying busy this year. Just a minute, Lucy. We have to test this new PA system we bought. You know, we have... A little higher. We got to do this right. Forgot. There we go. Now we got you.
Okay. I want to call attention to Mr. Berger's offer to print corrections on the history book. The new book will be just like the old one. It will have the mistakes that were in the old one. And this is your chance to have him print a page that will correct those mistakes that you complained about. We know only four people. He made this offer before, and only four people turned in corrections. But we know there are more because when we went to the grocery store, people came and told us about them, and we heard about them from other people. But it must be in writing. If you have a correction, give the page number, the name of your story, the sentence the way it was in the book, and then the way you want it corrected. And I believe, I've forgotten, did he tell me May 1st? I've forgotten.
May 1st is the deadline
for the corrections? Okay.
Free publication.
And you're to send them directly to Mr. Berger.
No rewrites. No rewrites, just thank you, Lucy. Good. Okay. Thank you, Lucy. Oliver, Historical Commission. Oliver, come forward, please. No.
On May the 1st, I think the newsletter had said May the 2nd. We will have a dedication marker of St. Dominic's Cemetery. That evening, the date is made is at on the 1st, which is on a Wednesday, and it'll be at 5 o'clock that evening. This marker is being put up this week. Matter of fact, we've had it now for about a month. It's 2 feet by 4 feet, and it's in bronze, and it lists everybody that's buried in St. Dominic's row by row. And it'll be put in the cemetery. There's about 40 of the tombstones are gone. And so you can go check that marker for those that are missing very easily. But we'll try to have it up sometime this week. The commissioner's putting it up. And the county has paid for the marker. It's put up by the County Historical Commission. And the records that we got are from Holy Cross Church and from a list of, that Mrs. Kimmerly had made back in about 1910. And so we used both of those lists to compare them. And we hope everybody is right on that list. But anyway, it's row by row who's buried in Old St. Dominic Cemetery. Yes? May the 1st. It's on a Wednesday. May the 1st at 5 o'clock in the evening is when we'll have the dedication of the marker. Thank you.
May the 1st. We got it wrong, I guess, Oliver. Thank you. Public Relations, Jerome Winans.
You know, we have internal and external PR, and one of the pleasures of working with the organization is having a story to tell and to work with Billy and and Herbert in the newsletter, but I'm also pleased to work with Dorothy Cease. We sort of work hand in glove. I put a hand on the typewriter, and she puts on the gloves and moves boxes of books and ships them out with a helpmate of Gene Cease. But we do have some things that we wanted to report today. The history book display ads that Adrian alluded to a minute ago appeared in the area classified, the countywide news and classified, and we had the nice box ad in here for the special order. And a few of those have already come in, and I wonder how many of you in the audience today, hold up your hand, subscribe to or buy the Hondo Anvil Herald. Well, about at least two-thirds, I think, of the group present today do it. I wondered if you saw the bookmark. Did you see the bookmark ad last Thursday? Come on. Well, there went some money down the drain then. We thought that putting this on page two, up where you open the page and it would be right here by under your left thumb, that you would see it. If you still have that at home, or if you want to stop and buy one today, you might want to do like I did a couple of nights ago, is took some laminating material, laminated it, and asked Adrian for a little ribbon, punched a hole in it, and here is a nice little bookmark with the date on the back. This is a bookmark for posterity of the history book for Medina County. And it might make a nice little souvenir if you want to buy that book and give it to someone or use it yourself. So that's a little unique type of little ad that we try to do. But I'm sorry to say, Adrian, it didn't go over if our own members didn't see it. Display ad there that Adrian is showing again went to Castroville, Hondo, Divine, and Sabinal, and that is this coverage area here, and they tout it to be in the publication office to reach 25,000 readers. Of course, you never know how many of those are going to read our ad, but at least the word is getting out into the farms and farm-to-market roads. The flyers, we're already getting some success with the flyers. Herbert and Billy ran the flyer, a copy of it, in the newsletter, but we have other flyers for you to pick up today. They're at the front check-in desk or Dorothy Cease's desk out there. So if you want to send one of those to someone, or if you need another copy, take a copy or two today that you can clip off the bottom and send that. The publicity string book for CCHA is at the front desk, and you might want to look through and see the papers. And about the only thing you can say, some people are saying we're getting too much publicity. Well, being an old newspaper man, somewhat of an ad type, I don't think you can ever get the wrong, too much of the good kind of publicity, maybe the bad kind, but we hope that we're not boring the readers out there. My experience tells me that even though you run newspaper articles, and the newspapers have been very good about running them, particularly the Hondo Anvil Herald and the Castroville News Bulletin, we've tried other sources in the San Antonio papers. We've had some success, and Divine a little success. I don't know whether it ran in Bandera the other day, but if you use publicity, news articles, if you use advertising, in my opinion, word of mouth is still the best seller. So I want to sanction what Adrian said, to please do the word of mouth, and that way we'll reach that minimum of 75 for our order. Thank you.
I see Francis Gwynn is here in the audience, and Francis helped with the ad. This is the front page of your Hondo paper. Go home and look at it. And right up here, Francis put it in the nicest place for us, is the little bookmark. So go home and look at your Hondo paper when you get through. Yes, I mean, the latest issue.
Thursday.
Francis, thank you.
Ways and Means. Dorothy, hey, can you... Dorothy, come forward. Good. Great. I think I have 13. So that's, you know, we've only a couple of weeks. Oh, and here's another one for 4. So we're going to add it. Maybe we'll make our 75 before May the 1st. Thank you, Dorothy. Right. All these books make nice gifts, remember? And Easter's coming up. If you know a child or would like to place one in a school, the Let's Celebrate is the nicest little book. And I feel very proud that the San Antonio Public Library was so impressed that they placed an order and bought them after we gave them one. So I thought that was quite an honor for us. Historical sites, Mary Bell there. Excuse me. All right. Just one moment.
Come on, Mary Bell. While Mary Bell is winding her way to the podium, let me add this announcement to the one I plan on PR. We are preparing a nomination of the Castro Colonies Heritage Association based upon its publication since the first cookbook in 1976. To the second reprinting of the Medina County history, covering that period and those publications. And we're going to submit this to the annual contest of the San Antonio Conservation Society. And all I can say right now is that it'll go in next week, and we would hope you'd keep your fingers crossed.
All right, Mary Bell there.
These things scare me because I can talk loud enough without them. Under my chin? Hello. This is Dr. Hudson's wife, Jane, from Hondo, and she's going to accept the Historic Preservation Award being given to Dr. and Mrs. Miles Hudson for the Verner King home in Hondo. And this was a Victorian style house. It was built in Hondo, Texas, at the west end of 11th Street by Vernon King and his father, Isaac Hazel King. According to the son, Chancy King, the house was completed in 1911 or 1912. Vernon King was a farmer and rancher in the area for many years, as well as the owner and operator of a lumber company for a time. The lumber company was originally owned by Isaac King and in later years became Alamo Lumber. Where the house was originally built, it sat on approximately 100 acres. This property extended north and west from the home, and most of it later was taken by the government for the Hondo Air Base. Chancy King tells how the old Spanish trail ran through the pasture just to the north of the house. Mr. King says that somehow the rumor was started that there was gold buried in that pasture. Mr. King says that as a boy, he could remember seeing the lights out in the pasture at night where people were digging for gold. Some of the people came to his father and asked permission. They dug in the daytime. Mr. King says this was around 1917. The house was home to Vernon and Augusta and their three children. Mrs. King reportedly kept a lovely living room at all times for entertaining Eastern Star dignitaries. The house was originally built with two bedrooms, But as the family room grew, the front parlor became a bedroom. Chancey King relates that his father built the home with the intention of adding an inside stairway and room upstairs. This was not accomplished until the home was purchased and moved by Dr. and Mrs. Miles Hudson in 1984. Prior to being moved to Kaler Lacey Lane, 5 miles to the north and west, the home was owned by Jim and Nancy Dixon, who did quite a bit of remodeling. Miles and Jane Hudson purchased the home from the Dixons in 1984. The house was cut in half, yes, with a saw, and moved through the fields to Tarpley Road and then on out to Kaler Lane. The house is now situated on property 2 miles from the Tarpley Road on Kaler Lacey Lane. This property was originally owned by Earl Lacey, Chancey King. Chancey King relates that Mr. Lacey and Mr. King were friends way back. The Hudsons had maintained the original floor plan, except for adding the rooms, a study bedroom, both and storage upstairs. The wood floors and the woodwork were all refinished to retain the beauty of the old wood. All ceilings remained 11.5 feet. The Hudsons added a wood stove to the back porch, which was closed in. The fireplace was rebuilt in the den as it originally at its original location with the original mantel. The old brick was salvaged to make a brick sidewalk across the front. And Ms. Hudson says, we love it and the things and it's home. Maybe she'd like to say something more. They really did work on that house. So it's great pleasure that I present this to you, Jane, from our organization. And we're glad that you have preserved this building. And I was there more than once already, and it fascinates me. Not only the building and what they've done to it, but the furnishings as well. She loves antiques. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now she's brought us
a couple of pictures.
Okay.
It finally quit raining this morning.
So if anyone wants to see the pictures, we have. Will that be?
I don't really have anything to add except to thank you for recognizing our efforts. We, like I said, we love old things, and I can't seem to part with any of them. My house has what I call the museum look. So I've collected lots of family things, and they fit well in an old house, and anybody's welcome to stop by and take a look anytime. We're welcome to, we're happy to welcome you and take a look. Anybody have any questions about moving it? The reason I put in the article that it was cut in half with a saw, because people are so curious about how it was moved to the country, because it would not fit. At one point, Kaler Lane narrows down, and the banks on the side are steep, and so the house in its entirety, 52 or 60 feet across, it would not fit down the road. So because of that, it had to be cut in half. And people say, well, how did they cut it in half? And they cut it in half with a saw. They just cut it in half. And if you've ever done something like that, it's amazing to see how they can, on the outside especially, where the wood, the wood siding. When they're sitting there with two pieces, you think, this is ridiculous. They're never going to get this back together. And they do. It's just exactly perfectly lined up. So it was quite an undertaking. And I don't think I would do it again. I would do it once.
Thank you, Dad.
Okay, thank you.
In case y'all don't know, they're an asset to Honda in more than one ways because her husband's one of the medical doctors there. However, he's out of town today, so he's not with us. So we're happy to have them in more than one way.
Thank you, Mary Bell, and thank you, Mrs. Hudson, for being here. That's for you who are first-time members. That's one of the things that we do is to encourage the preservation and recognize preservation of the old buildings. And now, Bertha, our program chairman. Where is? Oh, she's coming around. Oh, God. I'm losing everybody today.
I wonder if we could take just a few minutes and kind of shift around a little bit, because when Mr. Ward shows slides, a lot of people are not going to see them. And so I'd like to say we have four seats in the front, and we want to move some of the chairs in the back over to the left over here. Would four people please come to the front, and then you'll be able to see the slides. You don't want to see them, it's all right, but you have your chance. You want to just listen. Yeah, and we could bring a few more up here. Come from this way up, huh? Oh, you're going to use both screens? Oh, okay, he says we're using both screens, so that should help. All right, we just didn't want anybody to miss them. Okay. You know, they're hearing all right, they said. Anybody else want to come up? Good. Great. All right. Now we just got one left, so that's good. All right, if you can... They're going to use both, so he says it ought to work. We're going to use both. She was about... Betty was about to move us into church. She said maybe we should go into church where we could all... Okay, well, that'll work. All right. Okay. All right, so you got a place now that you might see the screen, you think? Well, I think it's very fitting that we're here in Quihi today for our program on Indians. After all, I guess you know that Quihi was named... Well, the Indians named it. I had to reread my history to get a little bit clear on this, but it says in our Medina County history book that, you know, at one time there were three bands of Indians here, the Comanches, the Lipans, and the Kickapoos, and they noticed that there were a lot of big brown birds here that had white feathers on the tail and on the wings. And they call them Keechees. And then later on, that name stuck with the stream and the little lake up here. And, of course, when the first white man came, the Mexicans, they then called it, I don't want to get this wrong now. They call it Quishi, it looks like, Q-U-I-C-H-I. Well, our own Alsatian and German immigrants came here, and they changed the pronunciation then to Quihi. They took the C out and just left a Q-U-I-H-I. So we're in real Indian territory today. I wanted to say just another thing that reminded me of something. When I made my first trip to Alsace in 1958, I was standing at the bedside of a very elderly and sick relative. He was his name was Earhart, and he was the husband of Caroline Finger. And after I was introduced to him by Mr. Alphonse Bogue from Meinheim, the first thing this man said, "Gibt's noch wild in Texas? Do you still have wild ones there in Texas?" So you see, they're still, they were then, and they still are interested in our Indians and whether we still have them. So today we have with us Mr. Paul Ward, who is going to talk to us just about Indians, and I asked him if it was all right if I didn't go through his whole list of his background, which you've already read in the Hondo paper. But he is a native of South Texas, and he's considered an authority on the archaeology in South Texas and the Lower Pecos River. He's going to use visual aids now, and then afterwards he's going to answer questions for you about your objects you brought or anything else. Mr. Ward, we're happy to have you.
Intellect as we have now moved across South Texas for over 10,000 years. They left little evidence of their occupation. No structures, no perishable materials, except in the dry caves of the Rio Grande and the Pecos Rivers. It is this scant evidence, bone, shell, stone, and plant remains, that archaeologists try to interpret their way of life. As each year has passed by, more and more ways are discovered to aid in helping us discover or to interpret their way of life. The ability to date deposits of bone and charcoal has enabled the assignment of age to artifacts that were found associated with bone or charcoal. Now recent techniques are being developed to help us age cave paintings and pottery. The ability to date things made, used, or eaten allows a sense of history to be given to these people. What these people look like? Well, as we talk about them, let's look and see how they probably appeared at one time. Let me turn the lights off here, and Francis, if you'll get on there for me. Let me get my pointer. We're going to try to put two pictures here. These people were probably of Mongolian stock. They came across into the North American continent some 20,000 years ago. They came from what is now Siberia. I'm not going into the history of all that. That's been written many times in National Geographic and what have you. We're talking about the people now in South Texas that lived in and around here, this area. This is probably what they looked like. They were slender, they were sturdy, and they were very agile. They had straight black hair and probably brown skin. Their facial features were flat, with the Asian epileptic fold around their eyelids. The men stood about 5'7", and the women about 5'2". Their lifespan was much the same as our ancestors of the early 1800s, between 30 and 50 years. These peoples were able to live and live well most of the time in an environment much like ours today, except with more water and less thorn bush. They lived in small bands, most likely of family affiliation, moving from one resource base to another. And it appears that they returned season after season, generation after generation, to the same occupation sites. These sites being almost without exception own or near a reliable water source. At certain times of the year, they would gather for a harvest of regional food sources, such as the prickly pear tuna, the nuts and fruits, and certain game. These gatherings likely served a social purpose, marriage or obtaining mates outside the family band, telling of tales and passing on gained knowledge of food resources. During certain periods of this 10,000 year span that they were here, they buried their dead oftentimes in formal cemeteries, not just occasional burials, but in formal cemeteries as we have today, as they had in the Anglo culture for European culture for many years. As it is true of all peoples, they had spiritual aspects to their life. What they were, we cannot hope to assume. Well, we do not want to do that. We assume that they did. We don't know what they were. We can just only guess whatever best or worst what those spiritual aspects were. The food resources varied across Texas. On the coastal margins, saltwater, aquatic, and wildfowl, oysters, conch, fish, coastal plain grasses and plants, ducks and geese and crane. On the Rio Grande and Devils and Pecos Riverine area, typical desert plants, sotal, agave, lycogea, and the freshwater aquatic life. In the interior of South Texas and in all other areas, bovine, deer, rabbit, bird, turtle, snake, lizard, snail, mussel, acorns, pecans, hickories, hackberry. In fact, the processing of acorns may be a major factor in the large accumulation of burn rock limestone, which we call mounds or call middens. We'll get into that a little bit later. They ate everything that wouldn't kill them, just about everything that wouldn't kill them, except the poisonous was even used also for hallucination purposes, the mountain laurel, the peel, and the gypsum weed. And without metal or plastic, they used what was available for their tool kits. Stone for knives, perforators, drills, hide or plant scrapers, and hand choppers. Most of these tools were hafted in some manner. Bone for awls, needles, flint knapping tools, and jewelry. Shell for adds, gouges, fish hooks, and arrow points. Wood for spear or arrow shafts, and bows and spear throwers, and for building shelters. Clay and sand for the making of pottery in later times in their sojourn here. The list could be endless because...